One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
On DAB, digital radio, online and on 1089 and 1053 AM, this is Motti Meets. The emperor of fervent football punditry majestically sits atop of his sheepskin-adorned throne as he holds court with a football legend. Motti Meets on Talk Sport.
I'm John Motson, and on this edition of Motti Meets, I'm joined by one of the great goalkeepers in English football history. The former Arsenal and England number one, 75 caps, over 1,000 games, David Seaman.
Tage again, the chance to hook it in, and it's not gone in. How did it stay out? Asaba can't believe it. Asaba's volley, and then Pesca Solido, and Seaman, what a magnificent save. Breathtaking.
One of the greatest, if not the greatest save I've ever witnessed live, when David prevented Paul Pesca Solido scoring in the semi-final of the FA Cup back in 2003. We'll be discussing that particular moment in more detail later. But first, David, let's go back to the 1960s, growing up in Rotherham.
Yes.
Who were your goalkeeping heroes?
I think at the time, because I've always been a Leeds fan, I would be looking at David Harvey. But he wasn't a tall goalkeeper. So, you know, a little bit later, I used to watch Ray Clemens. You know, like even like with Schultz, a little bit, it was, you know, the difference in size was quite big. You know, so I always looked at Ray. And then even Bruce Grobbelaar, you know, because Bruce Grobbelaar, when he came to Liverpool, he really raised the bar on goalkeeping and where it was possible to take crosses. You know, he was sometimes nearly out of his box, never mind the six-yard box.
Well, you joined Leeds United, managed by Eddie Gray, I think, at the time. First choice goalkeeper there was John Lukic. And you left, I think, a little bit sadly, didn't you?
I left very sad, yeah. I went there as a kid. I was at school until Friday. I left on a Friday and I was starting at Leeds on the Monday. That's how quick it went as an apprentice. And then I had 2 years there as apprentice, then a year as a pro. And then, like you say, Eddie Gray, the manager at the time, I'll never forget walking into his room and he's saying, look, we're going to have to let you go. I want to try and get an experienced goalkeeper as cover for John. And that was it. And I went home and I'll never forget, I cried my eyes out because I was thinking, what am I going to do now? You know, where am I going to go? I've just had Eddie Gray tell me that I'm not really good enough. So what am I going to become now? You know, I just thought that my football days were over.
Well, they certainly weren't. Your next stop was Peterborough.
Yeah, exactly. And the lucky bit about that is that Alan Clark was the manager of Leeds and then he got sacked and that's when Eddie took over. But Alan Clark's assistant was a guy called Martin Wilkinson and he got the manager's job at Peterborough, found out that I'd been released or was available and then he came in for me. So from being told I weren't good enough, I had a week to start thinking about what I was going to do. Then I got a phone call my mum and dad got the phone call saying that they want to go down to Peterborough. And the first thing I said to my dad, I was like, where's Peterborough?
Well, I tell you what, there's still a David Seaman suite at the ground there. So so it's very much on the map.
Oh, yes. It is. I remember opening that.
Now, in October 1984, after two seasons at Peterborough, you joined Birmingham City. And I think Ron Saunders may have been an influence on you there.
He was. He was a big influence. And when I went to Birmingham, you know, I'd had two seasons at Peterborough and word was getting out of this young guy at Peterborough. I was doing quite well, you know, and it was a big move for me because when I went to Peterborough, I didn't realise how big it was, you know, and the fact that as a 19-year-old lad, I was now playing against fully grown men and footballers that were big and strong, you know. So every time I went out for a cross, I knew I was going to get hit. So it was a great learning curve for me. But then when I went to Birmingham, I was really surprised at how much goalkeeping knowledge Ron Saunders had. The very day that I signed for Birmingham, I signed my contract, and he says, right, we're going to do a training session. I was like, what? So we're doing a training session on the pitch at St. Andrews with all the press there. I was like, oh, wow. I got no kit with me or anything anyway. So like, they gave me the gloves and the boots, and I got all the kit on. And then he got some apprentices that were there that were taking these shots at me. And I was like, not only was I nervous, I was shattered as well, you know, because of all the tension of actually signing for Birmingham. And I go out on the pitch and do some drills and that lot. And I was really impressed by his goalkeeping knowledge. But to be fair to him, as soon as that training session was over, he went into the press conference and he just went, that lad will play for England.
Wow, good prediction. Only 75 times. Now, in your first season at Birmingham, the club won promotion to the old First Division. But the last home game of the season, I think it was a 1-0 win against Leeds at St Andrews, there was a really serious riot.
Yeah.
Around 500 people were injured. A 15-year-old boy died when a wall collapsed. It was the same day, David, as the Bradford City fire.
Wow, I didn't
realise that. That was the mid-80s. It was a bad time for football, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. I do remember the game, and I remember being aware of trouble in the crowd. You know, the Birmingham fans and Leeds fans fighting, and then the police going into the Leeds fans, and then, you know, people like trying to get away. And then that's where the wall fell down and obviously killed the young lad. And it also flattened one of our players' cars. You know, we saw what had happened the next day, and it wasn't a pretty sight. But it was one of those games where it was good for us because we were getting promoted, but then it was soured by the death of the young lad.
Well, after the first season, or only season in Division One, Birmingham actually were relegated, and you were soon on the move again, joining Queen's Park Rangers, £225,000.
I know, yeah, that's right. You know, it was strange, you know, because I was only, what, about 20, 21, 22-ish, and I'd gone there, and to go up was brilliant, but then to come straight back down. But then before I'd realised that we were getting relegated, I was being sold to QPR, and, you know, it was a great move for me. The only downside of the move to going to QPR was that, but they were still on the plastic at the time. So my first season at QPR was on the plastic pitch, which was as hard as this countertop.
Yes, I'm sure. And Jim Smith, I think, was manager there at the time, wasn't he? Now, you ended the 1987-88 season fifth in the old First Division, Queen's Park Rangers, 1 point above Arsenal, who we'll
really
come on to shortly. You were London's top club.
Wow, I didn't realise that. Well, that's good. Yeah, we had a decent team then. And, you know, from the transition, from the plastic, even the great Alan Brazil played at QPR when I played with him in my first season at QPR. You know, we used to travel down from Birmingham together. And I always remember then, obviously, he had his back problems at the time, and then he retired. But then moving on from that, we had a pretty decent team. And like you say, you know, to finish fifth and be the top London team was brilliant.
Was it around this time that you struck up a friendship with Bob Wilson?
Yeah, it was, because Bob was full-time goalkeeping coach at Arsenal. And then I think it was through Don Howe that managed to get Bob to come over to QPR and do one day a week. You know, so that was like for, I think, my third season at QPR. And it was brilliant for me because he was the first guy that I'd ever had that was not my coach, but the goalkeeping coach. You know, like I said before, like Ron Saunders knew a lot about goalkeeping, about positioning, about going down the line or dropping back, and then reactions and a lot of good drills. But Bob was different. He was a guy that would give you confidence in training, you know, not just in games. You know, we would do drills where you had to make a worldy save to get out of the drill. But even if you made that after like two or three shots, he'd be like, right, out. So that you finish the drill on a high, you know, and your confidence stays high. So to have Bob for my last two seasons at QPR was brilliant. And then the move happened.
Well, yes, but while you were at QPR, you made your England debut, didn't you?
Yeah.
I think this was against Saudi Arabia and Riyadh.
No, Saudi Arabia away. We flew out by Concorde. We flew back by Concorde, which diverted to go around the pyramids so that we could see it out the window. Part of the deal with England was they were sponsored by Ford at the time. So new debutants got an XR3i to drive around in for a year. And I was like, wow, this is a great life, this.
Well, actually, Bobby Robson was manager, and I think a lot of people probably won't remember that you only missed out on the 1990 World Cup, you know, Italia 90, because I think you broke your finger.
I broke my thumb in training, so I was third choice goalkeeper at the time, and I was out there for probably about the first four games, and I always remember we was in training, Paul Parker hit a shot at me, and I saved it and knocked the ball away. And I was getting ready for the next guy to come through on a shooting drill. For some reason, Paul decided to kick this loose ball at the goal. Kicked it at the goal while I wasn't looking, and it just hit me directly on the end of my thumb and broke it. And like you said, I'd only just signed for Arsenal at the time. You know, so there was big worries because the Arsenal doctor was also the England doctor, Doc Crane. He says, right, we need to go to the hospital, get x-rayed, and went there, showed it was broken. He said, right, we've now got to go and see George Graham, who was obviously going to be my new manager.
Yes, your new manager, because, of course, it was in 1990 that you moved, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Now, obviously, you became a cornerstone of that Arsenal back five. I mean, we'll go on to all the achievements in a minute, but I think we should mention Dixon, Adams, Bold and Winterburn. Oh, I mean, goodness me.
what a back four that is.
Yes.
You know, and it weren't by fluke either. It was by hard work and dedication and a lot of teaching with George Graham. You know, George Graham drilled that back four probably two or three times a week, and we would be doing the back four against eight attackers and me behind them, you know, and they wouldn't get through. They very, very rarely got through and tested me. You know, they were that good, you know. But like I say, it wasn't by fluke. It was by sheer hard work.
Now, your first season there, in fact, you won the league under George Graham, didn't you? Only one defeat all season against Chelsea.
Yeah, that's right. You know, and like you said, John, it was my first season, and to have replaced my friend in John Lukic was a massive season for me, because what happened was when I was at QPR, I went to go and have talks with Arsenal, and the transfer fell through because John didn't want to leave. You know, so then I had to go back to QPR for the last, I think it was about the last month or so of the season. You know, so I got a bit of stick, and then there was like a momentum change of the fans singing that they don't want to lose John Lukic. You know, they were like, we all agree Lukic is better than Seaman. You know, they were singing songs about me and everything. I'm thinking, oh no. You know, little did they know, I'd already signed for the club. You know, so the pressure was building, and then I had to go there, and I wanted to try and show what I could do. You know, and I remember my first game in England for Arsenal was a friendly away at Wolves, and pre-season friendly, and I did okay then, and then eventually I won the fans over.
Well, in that first season, 1990-91, you played all 38 league games in that championship winning side. You also reached the semi-final of the FA Cup. I mentioned that partly in passing because it was the Gazza goal at Wembley, wasn't it?
It was the it's the game that I turned up at, but I never played because I had a bad game. You know, by my standard, you know, Gazza's free kick, I always feel I should have saved that. And then even Gary Lineker had a chance when he made it 3-1. And it, like, I had what we call chocolate wrists on it. My wrists weren't strong enough at all on it, you know, but it was a memorable game because Arsenal hadn't played Tottenham in the semi-final of the FA Cup for a long time. And, you know, and it was that Gazza free kick, which he never, ever lets me forget about.
Mind you, you got your revenge over Spurs in an FA Cup semi-final 2 years later.
And Merson chips it in, and in came Tony Adams! And Arsenal have taken the lead. Anderson. Oh, and Seaman had to make it, and he did. It came off his own player. It was a wicked deflection, and the goalkeeper makes a vital save.
Tony Adams scoring the winners. Yeah. This was 93 when Arsenal won both the Cups, the League Cup and the FA Cup at Wembley.
Yeah, that's right. You know, and it was a big relief when we actually beat Spurs, you know, to get revenge for the first semi-final. But then to go on and beat Sheffield Wednesday twice was brilliant, especially for me being a Yorkshire man from Rotherham, which is right next door to Sheffield. You know, I've got a lot of my friends that were Sheffield Wednesday fans, and you know, they were giving me a lot of stick until we actually played them in the final.
This is Motti Meets on Talk Sport with David Seaman.
Now, Arsenal were moving into European territory, weren't they? I mean, you won the Cup Winners' Cup, beating Parma in Copenhagen. And was that a big step forward when Arsenal started to mix with the best and biggest and best in Europe?
It was a big step forward. It was a step that I don't think that the team that we had out in the final wasn't really ready for. It's just that the back four again were doing their stuff, because I think Palmer had people like Zola, Brolin, Asprilla. But the thing that I remember the most of all about the game is when we arrived there, there was a podium at the side of one of the stands, and it was obviously the podium for after the game, and it had winners Palmer written on it already. And the lads saw that, and we were like, oh, really? Obviously, they just got a little extra piece of wood that they were going to slide in case we won it. But it was great motivation for us. But I remember us catching, I think it was Asprilla. We caught him offside about 100 times in that game, you know, so it gave us a good breather.
Well, in fact, you reached the final again the following season, but by now George Graham had been sacked.
Yeah.
Stuart Houston, I think, was caretaker manager when you went to the Parc des Princes in Paris.
Yeah.
And it was Zaragoza.
I know.
I'm sorry, David.
I can't believe you're going to say his name, John. I'll let you.
I mean, the fans used to chant it, didn't they? Naive, from the halfway
exactly.
line. What happened?
Oh, well, in even Spurs, they had a brumming fanzine magazine invented over that mistake, saying "One flew over Seaman's head." That was the name of the magazine. What happened? Well, to be fair to Naeem, though, he meant that. All right, it was a bit of a fluke, but he actually meant to do it, because he'd done it a little bit earlier on in the game where he tried it and it almost hit the corner flag. You know, but he decides to do it in the last minute of extra time. You know, I'm thinking of penalties, and I just knew I was struggling, and it was swerving in the air. I got my feet mixed up. It goes in, and I'm thinking, oh, God, why me? You know, and little did I know that there was going to be another one that was very similar to it later on in my career.
Well, we'll go there later, because by now you had established yourself as England's number one goalkeeper. You played in that match in Rotterdam when England's World Cup hopes for qualifying for 94 collapsed, and of course Graham Taylor had his row with the referee over the Ronald Koeman incident, and then of course I remember two other games around that time, going to play San Marino when they scored in 9 seconds.
No, and we need to win by at least 7.
Mm.
Only if Holland didn't do very well in their game. And then, like you say, after so many seconds, Stuart Pearce sends me a short back pass. The guy nipped in, took it round me, and we were 1-0 down in less than a minute. So it wasn't the best of starts.
No, so we didn't make USA 94.
No,
but what
right.
we did make, of course, and this is a centrepiece in your distinguished career, Euro 96.
Yeah.
Now, you must have really enjoyed that for just, all sorts of reasons.
Just great, great memories, John. You know, not only, was it in England and we were playing at the old Wembley, just the way that the tournament went, we didn't start very well. I think it was Switzerland, and we ended up with a 1-1 draw. Then we've got to play Scotland next, and we're thinking, oh no, so we needed to win that game. And, obviously I had, quite a big influence.
Now let's just stop there for a moment, because everybody remembers Gazza's goal against Scotland. But a lot of people don't remember. It was only 2 minutes earlier. You'd saved a penalty from Gary McAllister.
Exactly. And it was Tony Adams that gave the penalty away. And it was a blatant penalty. And I remember getting up thinking, oh, no, because we were 1-0 up at the time. I was just hoping that I'd get a chance of saving it. And then when I saw it was Gary coming up, and Gary had had a few penalties against me before, and I knew that he changed his sides. Sometimes he hit it hard. Sometimes he placed it. And I weren't too sure what he was going to do. So I just waited. And then, to be fair to Gary, the ball did start to move a little tiny bit. And I think that's why he went for pace. And he hit it so hard that I'd already decided which way I was going. I was going to dive to my right. And he hit it that hard that I couldn't get my arm out straight to stop it. So I just stuck my elbow up, which was like the quickest way of stopping it. Luckily, it caught me right on the end of the elbow, flew over the crossbar. And then the next thing I remember is Tony Adams just running up to me and giving me a kiss on the cheek, and he got a real bristly chin.
It's Gary McAllister this week. Oh, saved by Seaman!
Well done. Well, so we beat Scotland 2-0. Then, of course, the game against Holland when Shearer and Sheringham were on fire, 4-1. But now let's get to the quarterfinal against Spain, because now here you were, really under the microscope, a penalty shootout.
Yeah, penalty shootout. But in a game where we were all, we were lucky to stay in the game. Because Spain had I think they had a goal disallowed for offside that wasn't quite offside, and they were on top a lot. But then to go to the shootout, and I remember I think one of them missed, and then it came down to my save, and it was against Nadal, wasn't it? And I remember the commentary about the beast of Barcelona, and then the next thing. But if you watched that footage, when I make the save, I don't realise for probably about, what, 2 seconds that that's the deciding penalty. So I make the save and I get up. And as I get up, I look and I can see all the lads just bombing over towards me. And then I realise and, you know, I throw my arms in the air. And then we just, you know, we just had a great time after that.
So after all that excitement, how disappointing was the... Also, of course, this is another penalty shootout, the semi-final against Germany.
Yeah, it was. It was really disappointing because we knew that we were so close. It was a great night as well. It was, you know, we played well. Germany played well. And I think, you know, when it went to extra time and then penalties, it was like kind of the fair result. Not result, but a fair conclusion to go to penalties because both teams were playing really well. You know, we had Gazza's chance.
Yeah.
We had Darren Anderton's chance where he I think he hit the post. You know, Gazza was inches away from getting us through because it was golden goal time, weren't it? Then?
It was.
It was frustrating. But then I'm thinking, oh, here's a chance of glory again. You know, of course, the goalkeepers are in a win-win situation in a penalty shootout. You never rarely get blamed for if you let a penalty in. And I just remember I actually touched one of the penalties. You know, that was like fingertips. They were so good at their penalties.
They were experts, weren't they?
Yeah, they were, you know, and they had the confidence of taking the penalties and they would pick a spot and they could hit it, you know. Unluckily for us, you know, we had poor Gareth coming up and, you know, when I saw him coming up, I was thinking, I've never seen him take a penalty in training. You know, so I was surprised that he was coming up to take one, you know, but he'd shown the bottle. You know, he put his hand up and, you know, so you have to respect him for that. But, you know, obviously he missed the penalty and we were out. And it was such a strange feeling after all that had happened in Euro 96 that as quick as that, you're out. And that's it. You're done. It was a strange, strange feeling.
Well, within a few months of Euro 96, Arsenal had a new manager.
Yeah.
Tell me about the first impressions and impact of Arsene Wenger.
So when we found out that Arsene had signed, a lot of the players, including me, we were like, Arsene who? Because we'd never heard of him. We knew that Glenn Hoddle had mentioned about him before. And then when he came, we saw him and he was this guy that looked like a, you know, he looked like a teacher or a professor. You know, he didn't look like a manager or, you know, coach or anything like that. But then as soon as we met him and then we had training sessions with him, and he came in and he just changed everything about Arsenal. The way that we trained, the way we played. You know, we even had like Tony Adams and Steve Ball playing out from the back, which was never known. But not only that, the nutrition side of it was just phenomenal. We were watching the French lads, people like Patrick Vieira and Manu Petit, Gilles Grimondi, Remy Gard, Nicolas Anelka, eating so much food before the games. That we couldn't believe it. We were thinking, how are they going to run around with all that food inside them? But we were watching them and they were hardly ever tired within 90 minutes. So a lot of the players then got on the diet and just noticed a massive difference in their games as well. You know, but they were lasting the whole 90 minutes a lot better. You know, and to be fair to Arsene, he put a good 2 or 3 years, extra years, on that back four's careers.
Cutting out the drinking?
Cutting out a lot of the drinking, you know, we're still English, we still sneaked a few. But the Tuesday club got abandoned straight away.
The Tuesday club was out, right. Now, in his first full season, 97-98, you won the double.
Yeah.
1 point ahead of Manchester United in the Premier League, and always nice to win at Wembley. You beat Newcastle United.
Yeah, it's great to win at Wembley, but, you know, to do the double was so special. It was quite special for me as well, because Bob Wilson, my coach, my full-time coach now at Arsenal, always used to remind me, yeah, but I'm the only goalkeeper to have won the double at Arsenal.
Of course,
you know,
71.
So we used to have a bit of banter going on about that, and it was brilliant to equal his achievement, you know, when we did that. And like you said, to cap it off with a win at Wembley against Newcastle was brilliant, and not for Shearer to score past me.
There's Parlett, looking for Anelka. Oh, the flag stays down. Can Anelka take it on from here? Nicolas Anelka! Oh, Arsenal have got 2-0! Is that going to clinch the double?
Well, now, you were flying on all cylinders. You were winning the league, you were winning the cup, you were the established England goalkeeper, and that meant, of course, the 1998 World Cup in France.
Yeah.
And the infamous match, I suppose I should call it, against Argentina.
Yeah, that's right. You know, and it was a strange World Cup, you know, because we played okay, and then we get a chance of playing Argentina to go, you know, into the next knockout stage.
Yeah.
And I remember that everybody just felt really tired. You know, and Glenn had got a lot of guys around him, like club doctors and nutritionists and that. And we all, a lot of the players needed, like, a vitamin boost. You know, and luckily that's what a lot of the players did, because the game went to extra time and then it went to penalties. And I remember, I think, I don't know whether it was the second or third penalty, I actually saved one. And then I think it was Paul Ince came up afterwards, and it was a great chance for us to, like, really stamp our authority in the shootout. And Paul's penalties, I think it was saved, wasn't it?
Yeah, and then David Batty, then, of course, wasn't it, the last one?
That's right, yeah. So it was really disappointing, and, you know, and especially against Argentina, who's, you know, it's a team that you always want to, you always want to beat them.
Yeah, we should also mention Michael Owen's goal, of course, which went down in history as
Michael Owen.
A very young
man. You know, that was amazing for him to be involved in that game and then score a goal like that. Was just amazing, you know. But we'd seen that in training, you know, we knew what he was capable of, you know, but to actually do it on a stage like that, on a World Cup stage against Argentina, was just phenomenal.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This is Motti Meets on Talk Sport with David Seaman.
Now, you were playing in finals nearly every year of one sort or another, David. You had now got this reputation of being a big match goalkeeper. Arsenal got to another final in the UEFA Cup in 2000. Now, here again we come to penalties. Because the Turkish team, Galatasaray, beat you 4-1.
I know. Yeah, that was another one where you go into that game, or going to the shootout, I should say, and thinking, I've got a chance here. You know, I've got a chance of making glory. And it just wasn't to be. Sometimes there is an unstoppable penalty, you know, and sometimes you guess right and sometimes you guess wrong. And normally I can guess right, you know, but I remember against Galatasaray, it was, you know, they ate some good penalties. But I always used to say that I had this secret of how to save penalties. And all it was, John, is I just used to, on the way the attacker approached the ball, at what angle he ran at the ball dictated to me which way I was going to go. And I just went. As soon as they put their head down to look at the ball, I moved so that they couldn't see me moving. And that was it. But whenever I got a chance of saying anything about it in the press, I said I got this secret theory. Well, just to try and get into the strikers' heads.
Seems to work to me. So 4 years after Euro 96, we went to the championships again in Belgium and Holland this time. Yeah. Quite a memorable game because we beat Germany 1-0.
Beat Germany,
After beating Scotland in playoffs to get there.
Yeah.
We beat Germany with Alan Shearer scoring. I believe you're quite proud about your performance that day, David.
Yeah.
Rightly so.
Yeah, it was. It was a great day because it's always nice to beat the Germans, especially after Euro 96. And I remember the game being really tight. You know, Alan scored. But the biggest memory I've got is the England fans in one of the stands. They were singing and jumping up and down that much that you could actually see the stand flexing, you know, because they were all jumping up and down together. It was just a great sight. But then you're thinking, hang on a minute, it was like quite worrying because in case anything happened. But Fortunately, it didn't, but they certainly made a lot of noise that night.
Well, that was a good night for England, but what wasn't such a good night for England, or for you actually, was when we lost to Romania in the third group game, 3-2. Now, I had to check this out, actually. I'd almost forgot. I gather you were injured in the warm-up.
No, I was. I remember it well, and I remember going out with Ray Clemens, doing my warm-up, and I was literally a minute at the end of my warm-up. So it wasn't like I wasn't warmed up. I'd done all my normal drills. And then I just said to Ray, just knock a few more balls at me, you know, just like directly at me. And he knocked one at me and along the ground, and I just leant over to pick it up, and I just felt my hamstring go, you know. And it weren't like just a little pull. It was an actual like a tear, you know, and I felt the sharpness of it. And I was like, oh no. I said to Ray, I said, I think I've just pulled my hamstring. And Ray was like, what? He went, get in straight away and, you know, let him sort you out. And I went into the physio and I'm saying, look, I think my hamstring's gone. And they told me to do some stretches on it. And every time I did the stretch, I was like pulling up in agony. And I said, look, I can't do it. I said, I can't go out there and then all of a sudden know that I can't take a goal kick or anything. And then that's a substitution gone. You know, so luckily or unluckily for Nigel Martin, he had to be ready straight away.
Yeah.
You know, it was hard because it was near the end of my warm-up. So this was probably only about 15 minutes before kickoff, you know, that he realised that he was going to be playing.
And we lost 3-2. And England's fortunes now, a little bit of a dip. Well, coming on to the 2002 World Cup qualifying campaign, we played our last game at Wembley, didn't we? The old Wembley, against the Germans.
Against the Germans, yeah. And I remember that well, you know, because it was I remember it was Hamann had a free kick just outside the box, and it was a very like wet day, rainy day. And I remember him hitting this ball, and I knew it was going to bounce right in front of me. And on an angle, and I just thought, try and get something behind it. But as I tried to get something behind it, it just lifted off the turf a little bit more than I expected, skidded off my glove, and it went into the goal. And like you say, that was the last game that we played at Wembley. And also, then what happened after that was that the manager Kevin Keegan decided to resign.
Reportedly resigned in the toilets immediately after the game.
It's true. I was there. I was there to witness that. You know, where I can remember him having a chat. I think David Davis was there as well, and I remember them talking, and he was saying that I've took it as far as I can. And then as I walked past, I realised what he was saying. And I was like, I remember saying to Kevin, I said, I think you're making the wrong decision, mate. You know, but he'd already made his mind. You know what Kevin's like.
Stubborn.
Very stubborn. Lovely guy, but a stubborn guy. But a guy that knows what he wants. And he just felt that was the right time.
Anyway, things turned because Sven-Göran Eriksson took over as manager. And a year later, we played the return in Munich against Germany.
Oh, yeah.
A game I'll always remember fondly. One of the best England performances I saw as a commentator.
Yeah.
I mean, what can you say? 5-1.
5-1. And you know, in a game where Germany were good, you know, they were a good team at the time. And then for us to go there, and I think it was at 1-1, I had a save to make. And I remember that I was struggling with a shoulder injury. And I made a save, I don't know whether it was from Janka, down to my right. And I remember it going out for a corner. And then I remember thinking, oh, please take your time with the corner, because my shoulder's like really aching. And I just had to like move it around a bit to warm it back up or get it moving again. And anyway, that happened. And then so that was at 1-1. And then on we went to score another four.
Beckham scores again. Now Heskey's to his left unmarked. Emil Heskey, could it be 5? Yes, it is! This is developing into one of the most memorable performances that an England team has put up in recent years.
It was so good, but we couldn't really celebrate because that was on a Saturday night. We had a game on the Wednesday.
Yes.
You know, another game, and that was up in up at Newcastle for England. And I can't remember who it was against, but it was, you know, we were like told, like, just be careful, you know, because we knew that we'd had an amazing result.
Yeah.
You know, we wanted to celebrate a little bit, but we just had to be very careful.
That season leading up to the World Cup, David, 2001-02, you had one of your very few ongoing injuries, I seem to remember. I mean, you Arsenal won the league and cup double in that season, but you only played 17 league games.
Yeah.
And in international terms, Nigel Martin, I think, played in 6 of the last 7 prior to the finals because of your injury.
Yeah, that's right. You know, I had a shoulder injury that kept reoccurring, and it was just a case of trying to get to the finals. You know, so yeah, that's why I didn't play. And you know, and in 2002, I'm getting a little bit older, so we should say, you know, so it's taken a lot longer to recover. You know, that was one of the good things with Arsene Wenger. He was brilliant at, he knew what sort of injury it was, how old you were, meant how long you were going to be off. He was so detailed in things like that. You know, he was brilliant at stuff like that, you know. But he knew that every time that I was back fit, he always put me straight back in.
Yeah, well, rightly so, I think. Cup final time again, of course, we should mention too. The cup final was being played at Cardiff then. 2001, Arsenal lost 2-1 to Liverpool. Two late goals by Michael Owen.
Yes.
But the following year, you played against Chelsea at the Millennium and you won the cup.
Yeah, exactly. And I remember that well because Cardiff was strange. It was a strange place to play, but it was a great atmosphere in there. It was nothing like Wembley.
No, I enjoyed it, I must say.
But it was a great atmosphere. And then we also, I think we played another one later on against Southampton with the roof on. And it was a totally different atmosphere again. But to beat Chelsea, and I remember in the FA Cup, all the games leading up to it, Richard Wright played all the games. And then we got Chelsea in the final. And then Arsene said, "You're playing in the final." So, you know, you can imagine Richard Wright's attitude after that.
Because he deputised for you in all the earlier rounds.
Yeah. We were at the stage, you know, like where they were rotating the squad.
Sure.
You know, and Richard was always playing in the FA Cup. But then as soon as we got to the final, he was like, "No, I'm playing my strongest team." And we went out there and won it, you know, and so it was justified.
And won the cup. So you went off to Japan and South Korea on a fairly successful note. Now, we're going to have to come on to this, David. Let's just remind people what happened. In the group, we drew with Sweden. We beat Argentina. David Beckham, of course,
penalty,
made up for what had happened
and
before. In that indoor stadium in Sapporo, the Sapporo Dome. Then we drew 0-0 with Nigeria, which I think, looking back, meant we weren't in the easiest part of the draw because we beat Denmark 3-0 in the first knockout round.
Yeah.
And then we went to Shizuoka, and of course it was Brazil in the quarterfinals. Michael Owen gives England the lead, 23 minutes. Now, just before we get on to what happened later, am I right in thinking that towards the end of the first half, I know Rivaldo equalised for Brazil.
Yeah.
Did Gary Lewin, the physio, come on the pitch and give you some treatment?
Yeah, because I went up, a ball got knocked in. I think it hit one of our defenders and popped up in the air. And then I came out and I shouted keepers. And Sol was there. And because I'd shouted keepers, he didn't jump, but he didn't move out of the way. So I ended up going over his back and almost like flipping, but my head hit into the ground. And then my legs came over the other side of me. And like really, if I'm honest, it didn't, at the time, it didn't hurt. You know, I knew I needed treatment, but all it had done is just like hyperextended my back. But I felt I was fine. I didn't get any pain after the treatment. We went in at half time and I still felt okay.
You've never made that as an excuse for what happened later.
No, it wasn't, John, because I wasn't, you know, I carried on. If I knew that I was injured, especially in a game like that, I would have come off. You know, there was no doubt about it. But I felt fine, you know, but it was one of those challenges or incidents where you think, oh, when you see it, you know, because like my back like went the other way. But honestly, I was fine.
Well, you were fine until, of course, the 50th minute and Ronaldinho's free kick. Now, before you give me your version of this, which obviously what you want to hear, I must tell you that there was a tremendous argument in the BBC commentary box about this goal.
Right.
I've never seen anything quite like it in my time because I went and joined the pundits in the studio at the end of the game, and Alan Hansen and Gary Lineker was insisting it was a freak, Ronaldinho's free kick. Ian Wright, and I've got to be honest here, because I'd seen him score one in Brazil, not dissimilar, in a club game.
Right.
Ian Wright and I were trying to suggest that perhaps Ronaldinho had spotted where you were and had meant it.
Oh,
now,
right. Well.
Well, that's my version. Now we'll get the real version.
Well, I wish you'd told me about the one that you'd seen before. I might have stayed back on my line a little bit more. But, you know, I remember him knocking the ball in, and then I was thinking, hang on, this is not bending. Like, I'm thinking it's going to be like a cross. And so I've gone one way, and then I've tried to get back the other way, and I've just got stuck. And I remember thinking, when the ball was going over my head, I was thinking, please hit the bar, because I knew it was going to be close. And then I just heard it hit the net, and I was like, oh, you know, the feeling that I had inside. I knew it had gone in. And people, even today, they still ask me, did he mean it, or did he, or was it a fluke? And I always say, it doesn't matter. It still went in from about 40 yards out. So for me, it's a goalkeeping mistake. Straight after the game, Gilberto Silva came out and told me he didn't mean it. But, you know, it still didn't matter, you know. So people still debate because he's actually said that he meant it now.
Yes, he did.
You know, so, it's, yeah. You know, this is what Gilberto said.
Gilberto, of course, an Arsenal colleague of yours.
Who played for Brazil, you know. So he, you know, whether he's trying to be kind to me or not, you know, but I'll take his answer.
Well,
it was a fluke.
you've always answered those questions very honestly. I seem to remember that one of the first people you rang after that, because you were pretty devastated, you rang Bob Wilson, your mentor and your coach.
Yeah.
And I remember him telling me that how emotionally upset you were.
I was, yeah. And I'd never had those feelings as bad as that, because I remember after the Ronaldinho scored the goal, we'd still got about half an hour left of the game, you know. Now I'm thinking, come on lads, you know, get me out of this. If we score and get an equaliser or whatever, then it's not as bad. But obviously then the game finished. But I remember during the game thinking to myself, oh, you know, what about what happened with David Beckham when he gets sent off, the treatment that he got for that, you know, what's it going to be like for me when I get home after this mistake? You know, even so, stuff like that's going through my head while we're actually playing. And, you know, luckily I didn't have a great deal to do afterwards, but we lost the game. And then it weren't until I started walking out towards the England fans, because I was at the opposite end to them, and I started walking up to them and I saw them all cheering. And, you know, that then I was like, oh, God, you know, it just felt that I'd let all them people down, you know. And I remember David Beckham coming up to me, Ray Clemens and Sven came up to me and said to me, and I can't tell you a word of what they said because I just don't remember what they said to me.
Well, it wasn't all down to that goal, David, because England didn't play particularly well in the second half against 10 men, because by now Ronaldinho was sent off.
He'd been sent off, yeah.
But I seem to remember there was some criticism of Sven's half-time team talk, that quote about we needed Churchill and we got Ian Duncan Smith, which I think Gareth Southgate has half admitted since then.
Yeah.
I mean, just trying to leave that goal on one side, it was a quarter-final, we were in the lead. Should England have done better overall in that game?
I felt we should, because we had a good team. We had a good team at that stage. And like you say, when Ronaldinho went off, there was still quite a lot of time left, you know, and we didn't seem to create any chances. It wasn't like we were like bombarding their goalkeeper or their penalty area. We just seemed to lose idea of what we needed to do. And, you know, and like what you said with Sven, it was, for me, it was always difficult that the fact that we've got a Swedish guy that wasn't a big, strong character anyway, you know, trying to motivate you in the dressing room, it just never worked. You know, when you think of the managers that I've had in, like Bobby Robson and Terry Venables and Glenn Hoddle and Graham Taylor, Kevin Keegan, you know, all them, they're massive motivators, you know. And but like when it was Sven, it was just totally different and nowhere near the same.
This is Motti Meets on Talk Sport with David Seaman.
Now, we move on again internationally, because the next thing that happened was that England, of course, had to try and qualify for the next European Championship. Your international career was coming towards a close.
Yeah.
Two more games for England in the qualifiers for that next tournament. A 2-1 win against Slovakia and a 2-2 draw. I was at this game at St Mary's, Southampton.
Yeah.
You drew 2-2 with Macedonia, and that proved to be your last international.
Yeah, it was. And
number,
I remember,
75.
Yeah, I remember Macedonia scoring directly from a corner as well. I never forget that. You know, the guy hit that ball with so much power and bend. And I remember watching it afterwards, and I saw Alan Hansen absolutely hammering me, saying that I was old and I was past it and my feet never left the ground. But when I freeze-framed the actual ball when it went over my head and then into the top corner, I was like full stretch and my feet were like 2.5, nearly 3 foot off the ground, you know. So it just annoyed me a little bit that he'd hung me out to dry. But, you know, I knew that it was coming towards the end because of what happened in Brazil, against Brazil. And then, you know, I weren't playing my best stuff for England. And I was coming towards the end of my career with Arsenal. And I never forget, I remember Sven phoning me up and just saying that, like, the next squad, I'm going to leave you out. I'm going with the other goalkeepers. And, you know, it's a day that, you know, that was my last day, but it was a day that I would never retire from England. You know, I still haven't retired from England.
No.
It's not. I'm not one of those people. I would play for England at any day or night. You know, but I was just, it was a sad time.
So the England career was over, but your club career wasn't. 2002-03 season, Arsenal again, notoriously good in FA Cup football in those days, of course, reached the final of the FA Cup semi-final and played Sheffield United at Old Trafford.
Yes.
Now, I'm going to make a confession here. You've made a couple. I'm going to make one here. I was commentating, and Sheffield United, who played pretty well, I think Warnock was the manager.
That's right.
They were on the attack, and the ball was in your penalty area, and I felt I saw a Sheffield United player stab at it.
Yeah.
And I think I probably realised it was Pesca Solido, and then I didn't know what had happened. It happened so quickly. The ball went off in another direction. And I'm sitting there in the commentary box thinking, well, what happened there? Well, fortunately, by this stage, of course, commentators were getting replays. And then when I saw the replay and saw your save, I thought, oh, my goodness, I didn't do that justice.
Well, you did. You did it quite well, actually, because I remember your commentary. Because I remember then on the replay, you were like, wow, this is all about Seaman. And it was just brilliant.
Page again. The chance to hook it in. And it's not gone in. How did it stay out? Asaba can't believe it. Asaba's volley. Solido and Seaman, what a magnificent save! Breathtaking. Pesca Solido thought he'd equalised.
For that save to be, you know, which was undoubtedly my best save that I ever made. You know,
you'd put it that high.
Yeah, I would. Yeah, you know, because it was a different save. Like you say, the ball came. I think they had a corner and the ball came over and it ricocheted from side to side.
That's right.
A couple of times, and then it ended up with Pesca Solido probably about 3 yards out. You know, and he tries to get a header, and he ends up getting like a header shoulder on it, and it's now gone. It's behind me, so I've now got to like arch back. But I know it's like right on the line, so I'm thinking I can't just push it, otherwise I'm going to push it into the net. So I end up like getting my hand behind the ball, then realizing I've got to scoop it out, and I scoop it out up into the air, and I think it's Phil Jagielka's coming in for the rebound. Thank God he absolutely just skied it straight over the bar. Otherwise, that save would have never got remembered, John. You know, it was just one of those things that...
It's in FA Cup folklore, David. You were 39 at the time. It was actually your 1,000th game.
Yeah, that's what I was told. I was told it was my 1,000th competitive game. And another funny story about that is that after the game, Paddy Kenny came up to me and he says, oh, do you want to swap shirts? I was like, yeah, swap shirts, no problem, like that. And signed it, safe hands, David Seaman. And then on the way home, I got a phone call. He's like, have you got your shirt? And I was like, no, why? Well, you've made that save. It's your 1,000th game. And I was like, oh, no. And in the end, I ended up phoning Paddy. And I says, look, Paddy, I says, do you mind if you... Yeah. And I said to him, look, I'll send you two shirts and a pair of gloves and all that. And to be fair to him, he sent it back. He's a great guy.
Good, good. Now, your last act, almost, for Arsenal. And this is another high, which we was in the FA Cup final, where you beat Southampton 1-0. You were captain.
Yes.
And that meant you lifted the trophy.
I know. And it was a really strange game. You know, we win it 1-0. I had quite a decent game as well. I had a good save to make. And then at the end of the game, Patrick Vieira was injured. That's why I was captain, because I was vice-captain for that season. And so I was the captain of the day. I, you know, presented everybody before the game, which was brilliant. You know, I'll never forget it. You know, I've always been on the other side of that, you know. You know, and then to do it, I didn't know it was going to be my last game for Arsenal, if I'm honest. But after the game, I went up to Patrick. I said, and Patrick had got his suit on, and I said to him, "We're going to lift the trophy together." And he's like, "No, no." He says, "No, it's you. You're captain. You go. It was your day." I went, "No, we're doing it together." He's like, "No, no." And I said to Patrick, "I says, if you don't go up, I'm not going up." He's like, "Really?" I said, "We go up together." He's like, "Oh, okay, okay." So when you see the photos, it's me and Patrick. Patrick's in his suit. I'm in my goalkeeper's jersey with my armband on, and it was a great moment. But like I say, I didn't know it was going to be my last game for Arsenal. At that stage, John, I was 39. I would always sign a year's contract. I finished the game. I went on holiday to Portugal, and Arsene Wenger phoned me up. I remember it clearly that I was on the beach in Portugal. He phoned me up and says, "David, I've got an offer for you." And I was thinking, oh, okay. He said, "I want you to be my number three goalkeeper." And I was like, oh, wow. And then he said, "But I want you to be my goalkeeping coach." And I thought, oh, that's because it was something that I was interested in. Obviously, having had Bob and realising what he did for me, I wanted to pass some on. And then Arsene said, he said, "But there's a 75% wage drop." And I was on the beach and I just started laughing. And I said, "Arsene, I said, look, you know what I'm going to do. I've got two other clubs interested in me. I got Birmingham City and Man City. You know, and
Man City with Kevin Keegan.
Man City with Kevin Keegan in the new stadium, and I just thought, well, you know, I said to Arsenal, I still feel I can play, so that will be my choice.
So that was it for Arsenal and David Seaman. 564 appearances, 9 major trophies, 3 league titles, 4 FA Cups, 1 League Cup, the European Cup Winners' Cup. David, what did Arsenal mean to you?
Oh, it meant everything to me, and it meant that the decision that I made was justified, because when I was at QPR, I wanted to go and see how good I was. And I went to Arsenal for less money than I was being offered at QPR. So I took a wage drop to go and play for Arsenal. You know, but I knew that if I went to somewhere like Arsenal, I would be tested and there was a great chance of winning trophies. And it was just, it was a fantastic time, not just to be a player, but to go to Arsenal and win things. You know, people come up to me all the time and say, they just shake my hand, they say, thanks for all the memories.
As you just said, you signed briefly for Manchester City under Kevin Keegan. You announced your retirement in January 2004 at the age of 40.
Yes.
Did that seem to you to be the kind of landmark moment to go, so to speak?
A little bit, yeah. I was ready. I went to Man City and it didn't go as well as I wanted it to go, if I'm honest. Yeah, I wasn't playing my best football. And I remember we were playing away at Wolves and the ball was down the other end and I was stood there just watching, and then I just had this feeling. I was like, what am I doing? And that's the first time I'd ever had any feeling like that about calling it a day. And I just thought, that's a sign. The next day, I used to rent one of Kevin Keegan's apartments off him, and I used to live next door to him. So the next day, I went round. I said, "Look, we need to have a chat." And I said to him, "I said, look, I'm going to retire in the summer." You know, so he had like quite a bit of time to line up another goalkeeper. And then 10 days later, we played away at Portsmouth, and I went down at Yakubu's feet, and my knee dug into the turf, which then swung me over, and my shoulder hit his knee. And Yakubu's a unit.
Oh, yes.
So my shoulder wasn't going to win. Anyway, I came off that game because I was badly injured. I had the scans and the x-rays and saw that it was going to be like 2 or 3 months. You know, I'd sprained the AC joint, so that meant there was a chance of it dislocating. And I didn't want to finish the game with a really bad injury. And I said, look, I'll call it a day. You know, and he said to me, he says, I've got a chance of getting David James. I said, you get him and I'll retire. And that's how quickly it came around.
Well, that was 15 years ago, David.
I know.
People are going to say, well, what else has David Seaman done apart from fishing in those?
A lot of fishing, a lot of golf, ice skating.
We know that you're a success at
yeah,
that. Yes.
I still ice skate now. You know, me and my wife, Frankie, we skate every week. You know, but he's been 15 years happily retired.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and people say, oh, do you miss it? And I can honestly say, I don't miss it one bit.
Well, I tell you what, it was a great career, David. I must say that. 1,000 games and 75 caps and goodness knows how many trophies. And it's been a great pleasure talking to you, seeing you in such good fettle.
Yeah.
And thanks for joining our programme.
Pleasure, mate. I've really enjoyed it. Thank you.
The undisputed world heavyweight champion of football commentators in another knockout interview. Motti Meets on Talk Sport.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello? Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Flimsy stands slowing you down? Well, it's time to upgrade. Armadillo builds durable North American-made tablet stands and kiosks. We're so confident we offer a lifetime warranty. So, elevate your business and visit Armadillo.com. That's ARMODILO.com and use code ACAST for 5% off. Armadillo, built to last, designed to impress.